No one quite brings to life the remarkable bond between humans and their dogs like New York Times bestselling author John Katz. He has gained great readership with enchanting tales and keen observations of his menagerie. You got to go to the place. There's just these dogs and sheep and chickens and
Donkeys.
A lot of donkeys.
Three donkeys.
Animals all over the place. John is back with his first collection of short stories, and it's absolutely delightful. It's called Dancing Dogs, and he shares 16 stories about this incredible, unique relationship that we have with these animals. And it's a wonderful pleasure to have John Katz join us. The book is out today. This kicks off the book tour, and we make that a tradition, and we are forever grateful for you being here. Thank you very much.
And thank you. It marks a long relationship, and it's great to always kick off the bookstore with, tour with Joe Donahue. Seems right.
I thank you very much. This is what number book are we up to?
This is 22.
Cheap.
I know.
My God. We're getting old, my friend. So this is this. You know, when I first you told me that you were doing this, and then I eventually believed you, and then and now it's out, and it's. Do you like doing stories?
I love this book. This book was actually born around here, really when the recession kicked. I started paying attention to mostly women in upstate New York, working in these box store jobs and making very little money. These very powerful relationships with dogs, cats, other animals. And so I spent some time with them, and I was exploring the point of connection, really. And it evolved beyond that. It's not only about dogs. It's a barn cat story and a donkey story. And a story really about the point of connection, about the people, more about the people than the animals, really, I think. And there's some surprise endings and some twists and changes in perspective and challenges. You know, I think it's... you know, there's a very cute cover, and some people are saying the book isn't as cute as the cover. I think it's probably true. There's some sadness in the book, although not much. A lot of happy endings. So it's a celebration, I think, of really why we love animals and how we love them and stories that reveal that. So it was a very, very fun thing for me to do.
I was you brought Red. Yep. It was a beautiful dog, and I kept on thinking that maybe that was Red on the cover, but it's not.
Is it? No, that is a Random House dog.
That is a stock image. Is that what that is? Because usually on your books, you have your dog.
I know, but they decided they wanted a cute puppy, and you notice there are puppies all over the book.
Yes, they're littered with these little...
And I was surprised. I didn't know about the puppies.
you let that marketing machine
That marketing machine, they know what they're doing, too. You know, my pictures are probably a little darker, and... and people just, you know, they wanted people to look at the book and go, oh, some people are distressed. They say, well, you know, I cried a couple of the stories. And yeah. I didn't expect to when I saw the puppy. But, you know, there's an interesting thing with dog books. And you and I have talked about this. There's this genre of people writing dog books. They just want the books to be happy. They want no life in the books at all. And, of course, that's not really my thing. But so it's not – there is some sadness in it, but it's certainly not a sad book, I don't think.
Well, one of the things that I found out about or that struck me about it is that there's that unifying theme. I mean, I think of when you first started writing about dogs and dog behavior of, you know, of how we treat our animals. And for many people, you know, they're the little four-legged children. And it just, you sort of, in this book, you're ultimately putting a face on what you have written about before of, you know, okay, these are the statistics, this is what we know, but this is a very human face to it.
Well, I've evolved quite a bit, as you know, I hope I keep evolving. You know, I always think good minds are always changing.
I've always thought of you as an evolved human.
I'm evolved all the time. Maybe too much sometimes. We can slow it down a little bit.
Stop evolving.
We can slow down.
Actually catch up with you.
As I range into my 60s, we can slow down. But I think what has always drawn me into writing about dogs is not the dogs, but the people who have the dogs.
Yeah.
And in this book, I think it was so powerful to see the impact these dogs had on the lives of people, mostly women. I mean, there's an old farmer in the book, an old dog story. But the fact that they're in these awful jobs, there's a woman from Dunkin' Donuts in Saratoga who inspired a story. And she was tough. She was making $8 an hour. She just was way behind money-wise, beat up, couldn't get her teeth fixed, and this job she really disliked. And her dog was just everything to her. She wanted a rescue dog. She couldn't get it past her husband, didn't want another dog. So she had this elaborate scheme to get this dog involving the Yankees into the house. And which I wrote about, became a story.
Yeah.
I thought it was just so illustrative of what these dogs mean to people, even in hard times, especially in hard times. And the drive to get them and the moments in which they connect, the moments in which they connect with them is really what I was after in this book. And I know short stories are tough sells, I know, in publishing, but it's the most exciting thing. I mean, I think it's a very warm book. That's a change for me, too, I think.
You know, I think short stories are a tough sell, but not in this case, because we are talking, I mean, this is very much your milieu.
Yeah, thank you.
And you are, and there is a connection. You know, there is a bond that these stories have about there is a theme, and it's very fascinating, I thought. And of course, it's beautifully written as your work always is.
Thank you.
The new book is Dancing Dogs. It's stories. It is by John Katz. It is published by Ballantine Books, and John's going to be at Battenkill Books tonight at 7 o'clock. To kick off the book tour, Battenkill Books at 7 o'clock tonight in Cambridge, New York.
And Saturday at Northshire.
And Saturday at Northshire, also at 7 o'clock, northshire.com for more information for that event, and we'll give out the details at the end of the segment. One of the things as I was reading the book, I thought to myself, how do you meet these people? Now, I said that to myself, and then I thought, well, because John's just talking to everybody.
No.
When I go out with you, you're pretty
charismatic yourself, pal.
Well, yeah, but
I don't see you walking alone in too many crowds.
No, I have told you. I have told you this is that you. I've seen you do this like too many. I've seen you do this. You're at a book event, like you'll be tonight, and people come up and they give you the book, and then they start telling you stories.
It's true.
Okay.
Very true.
And then at this point, I would be in my car. But you actually stay there and listen to them and talk. And you do that with such affection and sweetness and interest that I find that to be fascinating, because I'm thinking that, you know, after the 400th or 500th story about a dog peeing on the carpet, you're ready to get the check and walk out of the restaurant.
That's happened. I think for me, you know, I see it as a trade. I trade my stories for their stories, and their stories become my stories. It's a great example. I was getting coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, this dancing dog for the story, and this woman looks in the car and sees the dog. I was with a dog in the car, one of my dogs. And she starts going off about the dog, and I know how to talk to dog people by now. And I knew she had a story. And the story was that she was a rescue dog coming from North Carolina. She and her friend were going to the Wilton Mall to get it. Somehow she was going to get in the house past her husband no matter what. And this poor woman, I mean, she gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning. She's exhausted. She was afraid to talk because she had no front teeth and she couldn't afford to fix them. And so then I went back the next week and I said, how did it go? She tells me this amazing story about how she and her friend concocted this scheme where they dressed, they got the dog, they hid it from her husband. They waited. He was watching a Yankee game with Mariano Rivera pitching. She wraps a Yankee scarf on the dog and puts a Yankee cap on it and then waits until the game is on the line and Rivera comes up to pitch. I said, well, why? She said, because he never loses. I knew he would win. So he gets the other player out, and the Yankees win, and then she lets the dog in. And the husband is sitting on the sofa drinking a beer, looks at the dog with a Yankee cap. The Yankees win the World Series or something. And he says, what a great dog. And he embraces the dog, and the dog gets to stay. And I thought, what an amazing story on many, many levels. This poor woman is just loving this dog, can't wait to get it, wants to save it. And yet she has to get it around this guy who doesn't understand what she needs. And she comes up with this scheme that works. I kept thinking, what if the Yankees didn't win? What happened to the dog? Yeah. And she was so happy. It just lit her up. So I kept thinking of these animal points as, we talked about this with your dogs too and my dogs, they light us up. They bring light into our lives and love into our lives, and people need it. I also did some perspective challenging in this book, you know, challenging people. Probably the most controversial story was Luther and Minnie go to heaven. This woman wants to meet her dog in heaven, and she passes, and the dog passes, and she gets to heaven and wants to see him. And the dog angel takes her to heaven and says, well, you may not like it here. The dogs are a little different up here. And in one part of heaven, the dog is digging up garden bulbs. In the other part, they're having sex. In the other part, they're eating revolting things. And the other part, they're chewing up furniture. And she's horrified. She says, my dog doesn't ever do these things when he was down on earth. And the angel says, well, that's the point. It's dog heaven. They get to do what they want. So her whole perspective on dogs changes. And some people are upset by that story. They think, well, you know, my God, you know, we can't let these dogs do these things. But I think it's great. The challenge is to sort of look – with some perspective at why we feel the way we feel. Look at it a little bit from the animal's point of view. There's one story where there's a dog and a woman, and you can't tell throughout the whole story which is which.
Yeah.
I love writing that story. It was the most care I ever took with a story. You have to be careful with it. So I think that kind of surprise endings, changing, mixing it up, getting people to laugh, getting people to cry a little bit, getting people to think about it, that's just a pleasure for me. And a lot of it comes from these stories I hear from people. You know, they're so earnest and they're so passionate. I just drink them up. I don't get tired of them. I don't. And they all go into the mill and they come out. I mean, it's great. When you're up here in upstate New York, you don't get to see that many people. So everybody you meet is important.
I know. That's why we live here.
That's why we live here. That's true. I like that. I definitely like going back to the farm and cooling down.
That's why both you and I live on the sides of mountains.
Right.
When you think about you mentioned that it was a controversial story. When I read that story, I thought, well, you know, how cool that the dog, you know. I think people would just be happy with the idea of dog heaven.
It's interesting within the dog culture.
I mean, I just want my dog happy. You know what?
Right.
You know, and whatever they're doing.
Well, you laugh at it. It's a story that gets us to laugh at ourselves a little
absolutely.
Bit. You know, where it's not serious. You know,
yeah.
You know, but one woman was very offended and wrote a review. She said, well, you know, it makes me feel like I'm abusing my dog by not letting him do these things. This tremendous, you know, there's a huge culture of the dog reading world that really can't bear any pain. They love the animals so much, they just don't want any reality. If you look at the books you compete against, if you're me, they're pretty chipper. You know, they're all, I would say, sappy, not to sniff at them. But there are all these stories of dogs meeting in heaven and dogs being happy, and there's no trouble. And, of course, I think a life with animals brings some trouble. You know, you're going to love them, but you will have some loss. You will have some sadness. You will have some disappointment. That's part of it. It's part of life. I don't want to write a book that doesn't have some of that in it. Of course, I'm, you know, in a good dog, of course, I end up, you know, killing a dog, and that people weren't happy about that.
No.
This is different.
And also, you know, you got to think of it from the dog's perspective, too, of what we'd be like in heaven.
Well, and I think the great thing, we've talked about this, the great thing about a dog, the great drama of the dog, is everything they love to do, we don't want them to do. And so by living with us, the definition of a good dog is a dog that doesn't do what dogs like to do, but what people like them to do.
Yeah, but I would argue that at a level, we're both animals.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, and
we, maybe that's where we connect.
And maybe we have more in common. You know, if you take out the societal roles in a quote unquote heaven, then you know maybe we're a lot more alike than.
Well, I think that's where we meet.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are points of connection where we meet.
Yeah.
And that's why we love them, and that's why they love us, I think. But it's a trade-off. We each give up something and get something. That's the deal we make with them, I think, is they have to behave more like us, and we have to come to them at some point. And it's the meeting points, which is exactly what the book is about. Each one of the stories is about those points where we connect with them, you know, where there's this great burst of love and meaning. You know, the woman at the pharmacy who was using her dog to help her sell bottles of water so she can keep her job, you know, that was inspired by a woman I met in Glens Falls in one of those jobs. And you know, she had to win this contest to keep her job, and she needed the job. So she enlisted her dog and her cat, and they helped her. And that's the point of connection right there, you know, where you put aside these different species and different differences and different language, and you just come together in this great sort of impulsion of love.
Yeah,
that's what I was trying to catch.
You know, it's fascinating because you think of, and you and I we've talked a lot about this, but it's you know, the thing I love about my dog is when Brady, who's a big
you like big
lab,
you have big dog you like big dog
big chucklehead
big dog.
Lab. you're right. I do. I love the bigger the better. But with that said, you know, the thing that I really like is when the dog is a dog, because then, you know, you get enough time spending with humans. You don't want to be, you don't want them to be like us. You
right.
want them to be different.
Right. Exactly. That's why I think it's so important that we don't always think we know what they're thinking and feeling, because they are different from us. We want them to be different. We don't. That's why we love them.
And they don't. I'll be honest with you, because I want that to be a very. I certainly want that relationship to be one of. I always try to identify myself and what I am. I don't like being an owner. I don't like being daddy. I don't really know.
Like a partner.
Like a friend. You know, I don't know. Yeah, a caretaker. I don't know. I don't know. I don't, like, I've never come up with a term that I'm comfortable with. With my dog, I hate the mommy daddy thing. Yeah, that just drives me nuts.
It's a partner. Your dog is a partner.
Yeah,
it's a pal. It's a partner. But I think we've seen each other. I've seen you evolve. Remember how long it took you to get a dog?
Oh, I'm evolving too now.
And I've also seen you when you didn't have a dog. So you've evolved quite a bit.
Uh-oh.
I'm not the only evolver.
No.
Here.
And but they do change us, and that's all for the good.
I think their impact is always what I'm driven as a writer, is how the dog and the cat affects the person. This story I really love is called Old Dogs, about this farmer and his old border collie, and they run into this old coyote. And what happens to them, to me, is just this great metaphor for what you're talking about, is these completely different species thrown together in this common circumstance of figuring out what to do about it, and one which ends up changing the farmer's life quite a bit for the better. But I think animals awaken us to things. Animals have always marked the passage of my life. Red Hair just arrived from County Tyrone in Ireland. A woman read one of my books and said God told her he should be my dog, and that ended up happening. A wonderful dog. And he's marking my move to this. We're moving to a new farm, smaller place nearby. And Red is sort of the symbol of that. He's that's, I think, in a way, I almost feel like he came to mark that passage.
And so does that... Do we open up ourselves to that, or do they open us up to that?
I think if we are open to it, things can happen. They take us places. I think of Orson, who got me to the farm, brought me to the farm here, and I think of Rose, who helped me live on the farm, Izzy, who brought me into hospice work. Each one of these animals has opened me up to new experiences, and as I have opened up as a person, these experiences have deepened and enriched me. I do think you have to be open to it. I think if you see them as just this fur baby creature over in the wall, a little cute cuddly pet, it doesn't necessarily happen. I think you do have to work at it and think about it.
How much time do you think that we need to spend, in the sense of when you look at it, how much time do you think when I just said that I don't like the mommy daddy thing, I don't like the idea of being an owner, but I like the idea of us, my wife, myself, the dog, being a family, and I want the dog to be a part of those moments, those passages, those, whether it be a holiday dinner or a trip or going to see a football game. I like the dog to be a part of that.
Well, you just articulated, of course, it's one of the great meanings of animals. We get the dogs we need. We get the animals we need, and they bring us to what we need and want. And I think you just made a very powerful statement about family. And that's something that's obviously very important to you, and that's where the dog fits in. Other people would have different needs and different ideas. I think dogs are mirrors of us. I think they mirror our emotional lives, our histories, our aspirations. And again, the more we are open to it, I think I look at every dog as a mirror of me and where I am, because they become what we need them to be, what we train them to be, what we talk to them to be. And they pick up on our emotions, and there's an interaction that's very powerful. I think that probably have a difference from some writers about it, that I don't think I know what's happening. I don't know what's in the dog's mind. I just don't.
Yeah.
It's an alien mind, and it's not like my mind. But I do see the language of training and communication as being very powerful. We're trading emotions all the time with them. They're reading us, reacting to us. I think they become what we need if we let them.
How long have you had Red?
Red's been about 2 months. It's a great herding dog, working dog. Also a very loving creature. One of those dogs can go any place, fit in anywhere. I seem to be lucky getting dogs like that. And I also bring them places, which is great. Socialize them. I feel so strongly that dogs have suffered from just being segregated from so much of the world. The more they go places, the more they fit in, the happier people are, the happier they are. So he's another example of that. He goes every place with me. He's going to be tonight in Battenkill.
But that's good for you, but that's also good.
Absolutely. Mostly good for them. Absolutely.
Yeah. And but here again, that's then they become entwined with us.
And they know, and with other people, and they become socialized and comfortable. And,
yeah.
And you have the same experience, I'm sure, with Brady. Wherever I go with Red, I see people smiling.
How could you not spoil it? I'm showing John the picture of Brady.
Beast? It's the Beast? He's a little dinosaur, that one. Wow, I've heard stories about him in Cambridge. He's a strong dog.
He's a big boy.
You like the big boys.
Yeah. Look at that.
How's he on a leash?
His head's about 9 pounds.
Wow, that is a big dog. It's even bigger than Sophie.
Well, not, you know, not like...
How much does he weigh?
He's not a mastiff.
That's not even a lab.
He's only like 85 pounds.
Only 85 pounds.
Well, Red is like 30 pounds. Like 110.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so I mean, that's quite a difference.
Can you walk him on a leash? Does he drag you around?
Oh, yeah. He drags you all over the place.
Yeah, they're big. Yeah, but, happy dog, though.
But I've never seen a...
That's where attachment theory comes in, though, because I think when you talk about family and this dog entering it,
yeah,
this happy, jovial person fits into your life in a very powerful way.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
And a knucklehead, you know, and I just love it. And the difference between, because we had a female dog, and you've been all over the place on that too, you know, of trying to figure out the personalities. Yeah, I mean, they're great. And yet that working dog is a completely different personality.
He's a great personality, and he's also a very, very sweet creature. I love his combination of love and work. He would make Freud very happy. And we have sheep for him, so he's lucky.
The book is beautiful. It's a collection of stories. It is called Dancing Dogs. It is out today from the folks at Ballantine, from the mighty Random House. And John will be signing and reading from the new book tonight at 7 o'clock at Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York. You can go to battenkillbooks.com, battenkillbooks.com for more information. And go see John tonight at 7 o'clock. And Red will be there as well. Also, John will be speaking and signing books on Saturday night at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont. And you can go to northshire.com for more information about that 7 o'clock event. Again, the name of the book is Dancing Dogs. John's website is bedlamfarm.com. My friend, I thank you very much. Congratulations on number 22, another great effort, and I look forward to catching up with you.
Me too. I'll be here for the fun drive if you need me.
Excellent. That'd be wonderful. Thank you very much. Again, Dancing Dogs, bedlamfarm.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.